Back on the Truman, the skipper stared at the satellite imagery. The hilltop villa was obliterated, nothing left standing except a few blackened stones. Even the cars and vans were only twisted wreckage now. The steel hatch opened and the flight operations officer stepped in and saluted. The skipper dumped the satellite image and returned his salute. "Scotty's back. Picture-perfect trap." The skipper nodded. "Tell him well done for me. And then neither of you is to say a word about this again. Ever. To anyone."
"Aye, aye, sir."
Matagorda Island, Texas. It was a week later, a balmy, sunny Sunday afternoon. The Astro Complex was quiet. Most of the staff were home enjoying the weekend. A skeleton crew stood by the launch pad, where the space plane had been mated with a fresh booster, ready for another flight to the power set if necessary. Nacho Chavez sat glumly in front of Dan's desk. Beside him, Kelly Emmons looked on the verge of tears.
"It was my fault," she said to Dan. "I encouraged her to play up to al-Bashir."
"You warned her it was dangerous," Chavez said. "You planted the tracker on her."
"A lot of good it did."
Dan could barely believe what they'd told him. April's dead. She was killed in the bombing of that villa. "With al-Bashir and almost a dozen others," Chavez said. "And al-Bashir was behind it all?"
"All of it. The crash of your space plane, the murders of Dr. Tenney and that technician, Larson.
And they used my power sat to try to assassinate the president." Chavez nodded. Then he said, "None of this leaves this room, Mr. Randolph. We're depending on your discretion."
"We thought you'd want to know about April," said Emmons.
Dan felt stunned. April got herself mixed up in this cloak-and-dagger stuff, he kept repeating in his mind, and she's dead? Killed. He couldn't get himself to believe it. He expected her to pop through his office doorway any minute. But she's dead. They killed her. Why in the ever-loving blue-eyed world would she get herself involved so deep?
"For you," Emmons replied. "She did it for you. I think she was in love with you."
Dan grunted as if he'd been punched in the gut. He opened his mouth to say something, but no words came out. His breath caught in his throat.
"She was a very wonderful woman," Emmons went on. "More wonderful than you know."
Dan's head sank halfway down to his chest. "Jesus," he mumbled. "Sweet Jesus Christ Almighty." "We're getting a good deal of information out of this Williamson guy," Chavez said, trying to sound brighter. "He's being very cooperative." "So what?" Dan wanted to say. Instead, he heard himself ask, "And the French? How do they feel about us bombing one of their villas?" Chavez put on an innocent expression. "Who bombed one of their villas?" "The terrorists blew each other up." "The French are going along with that?" "We've allowed them to participate in Williamson's interrogation. I'm sure we'll make other concessions to them as well." Dan shook his head wearily. "I suppose I could offer them electricity at a cut rate. The power sat is back in operation?" "Since yesterday. Delivering 10 gigawatts to White Sands day and night. I'm getting bids for the electricity from 6 different power utilities in the States and another one in Canada." They chatted for a few minutes more, never mentioning April again. Then Chavez got to his feet and Emmons followed suit. "We've got to get back to Houston," Chavez said. "I can fly you." The FBI agent shook his head. "We'll drive. Officially, we haven't been here. This is all on our own time."
"I'm really sorry about April," Emmons said, her voice trembling.
"Yeah," said Dan, his own voice faltering. "Me too." And then there was nothing left to say. Dan shook hands with the two agents and went out to the catwalk with them. He watched them walk slowly down the metal stairs, their footsteps echoing in the empty hangar, and walk out to where Chavez's car sat parked in the nearly empty lot. Chavez drove away, and the hangar grew very quiet. "Won't be for long," Dan said to himself.
"We'll start building 2 new space planes in a few weeks, and laying out plans for the next power satellite."
He walked back into his office and booted up his computer to look at his appointments for the coming week. "Testimony to Senate Science Subcommittee," he read from the screen. I wonder if Jane will be there, he asked himself. Washington, D.C.
So you're telling this subcommittee that your power satellite is not dangerous?
Senator Quill asked sharply. Seated at the green baize-covered witness table, Dan said crisply,
That's right, Senator.
A power satellite is no more dangerous than any other electrical power station if it's operated properly.
But terrorists turned it into a death ray,
snapped an angry-faced, white-haired senator several seats down from Quill.
Nearly 1,000 people were killed.
Dan had expected that. Senator, he replied patiently, how do you prevent terrorists from blowing up a nuclear power station? The senator's white brows knit.
Why, you have guards and such.
Right, said Dan. You protect the facility, and that's what we're going to have to do with power satellites. Protect them. Guard them. They are very valuable assets, and just because they're in space instead of on the ground doesn't mean that they shouldn't be protected, or can't be.
Protected how?
Quill asked, anxious to retake control of the hearing. Dan started his prepared little lecture on building fail-safes into the satellite controls and having crews standing by with spaceplanes ready to fly out to a power sat in case of any emergency. As he spoke, though, he wondered where Jane was and why she hadn't attended this hearing. By day's end, Dan felt bone-tired and ready to fly back to Texas. The Senate subcommittee hearing had gone favorably, he thought. Quill had even broached the idea of proposing to the Department of Defense that the Air Force take on the task of protecting American assets in orbit. Dan ate dinner with his new Washington-based public relations staff, who congratulated him on his testimony before the subcommittee. Then he rode out to Reagan National Airport in a hired limousine. The Astro corporate jet was parked outside the General Aviation Terminal. As he ducked out of the limo, Dan saw that a dank, chilly fog was rolling in from the Potomac. He heard the thundering roar of a commercial jetliner taking off. The fog won't keep us grounded, he thought with relief. I'll be home by midnight. And then his heart flipped as he saw Jane walking toward him from the terminal building. She was wearing a fitted suit. Modest, yet it showed her figure to good advantage. Light color. It was hard to make out the shade in the dim, foggy evening light.
You're leaving without saying goodbye?
She asked, trying to smile. I was hoping we could get together while I was in Washington, he said, but then I figured it wasn't going to work.
You're going back to Texas.
And you're going to the White House. She hesitated a heartbeat, then stepped closer to him, so close he could feel the warmth of her, smell the delicate scent of her perfume.
Dan, she breathed, maybe I should go to Texas with you.
His jaw dropped open.
I could give it up, the whole thing, all of it, Jane said.
Leave Scanwell? Leave Washington? She didn't reply. He saw tears welling in her eyes.
You can't do that, Jane, he heard himself saying.
You'd hate yourself in the morning.
Be serious.
I am. You'd hate me, sooner or later. If Scanwell doesn't win the election, you'd be miserable.
But what about us?
Now he fell silent for a long, agonizing moment. At last, it just won't work, Jane. There's too much between us.
Your satellite.
Your career. Scanwell. The White House.
My God, Dan. I wish it wasn't like this.
But it is. She leaned her head on his shoulder and he slipped his arms around her waist. Dan's mind was racing, trying to find a way, thinking of what would happen if... He lifted her chin and looked into her misty green eyes. I love you, Jane. I always will.
And I love you, Dan.
She kissed him lightly on the lips. He let his arms slide away from their embrace. They stood face to face, almost touching, silent and miserable.
Well, he said, good luck. After you get elected, invite me to the White House.
The Lincoln bedroom,
she said, trying to smile. Dan realized there were no more words in him. He walked past her to the plane that was waiting for him. It was the most difficult thing he had ever done. Matagorda Island, Texas. Several weeks later, Dan sat alone at his desk in the evening shadows and watched Morgan Scanwell make his acceptance speech at the convention.
And more than mere energy independence.